every plant has something to teach us.
Land can change and humans can have positive relationships with nature.
Hi, this is Leah Levice and you're listening to Food Forest Walk, a podcast about permaculture-designed food forest ecosystems. In this episode, we'll join Grace Gilker on a guided tour of the Festival Beach Food Forest. To see a slideshow of the plants that are mentioned in this podcast, use a Podcast 2.0 app and follow chapter images. You can find a Podcast 2.0 app at podcastapps.com. The Festival Beach Food Forest is a regenerative agroforestry system. It's located on the shores of Lady Bird Lake along I-35 in Austin, Texas. Without further ado, here is Grace Gilker. Enjoy the walk.
Whose first time is it in the food forest? Raise your hand. Ah, it's nice. This was the first thing I did in the food forest, and it really got me, as the kids say. So I've been volunteering for about 2+ years now. If you also catch the bug, we've got big community work days every month on next Saturday, the second Saturday of the month. If your work schedule permits, we've got Tuesday, Thursday morning, smaller groups. You learn a lot in those if you're around. And then Wednesday evening after work, we have a group out here too. So if any of that's interesting, find us on Instagram or bother one of us and we can definitely tell you more because we're always looking for more volunteers. We're all volunteer run. This is the food forest. We're on 2/3 of an acre of public land. We've been in the ground, so to speak, for about 7 years. So 7 years ago, the only thing that was here was these two pecans and that live oak and Bermuda grass. So everything you see here, all understory and below, is like 7 years or less, which is pretty wild. You may notice this is not quite a community garden. Like, we don't have individual plots. We don't have like straight fancy rows of vegetables. We're organized under a permaculture philosophy, which extends to how we organize our group as well. So sort of like a committee structure, very sort of bottom up. It's called sociocracy. If you hang around, you'll hear a lot more about it. But in terms of the garden itself, we basically are trying to mimic and build an ecosystem that ideally can take care of itself, trying to stack functions in the plant community. So plants that make mulch, or plants that add nitrogen to the soil, or plants that will attract pollinators that we want, or, you know, be food all year round. Those are all things we're excited about. We try to emphasize either perennials, the stuff that'll be here all year round, or native plants that might encourage happy wildlife things. If you look around, you'll see a lot of birds in particular. Sometimes we'll get a bunny. I've seen a toad on occasion. It's worth hanging around. But today we're gonna focus on the plants, give an introduction to some of our favorites. Anybody who's blooming right now or in a sort of bountiful spot, maybe we'll stop for a snack. But yeah, we'll focus on the stuff that's edible, and then if there's any medicinal uses, we'll try to touch on those too. So I wanna start here because it's one of my favorite trellises. This is passion flower vine. It's Passiflora incarnata. That's her Latin name. I really appreciate that Latin name because it helped me learn that Latin names are in many ways occasionally as arbitrary, because it's literally just like passion incarnate. It was just some Spanish missionaries who were like, this plant reminds me of the crucifixion of Christ, ergo that's its botanical name. And I find that endearing. Every year, these guys sort of start near the bottom because they die back in the winter, but then they cover the whole trellis and it's very fun. So these are their flowers. They're incredibly alien and magnificent. Incarnata is the medicinal, the one you can use for like teas that are really nice. And then what I really like is they make these crazy fruits in these little bird cages. And this one's a little past its prime, but if we see a bright red one, I can still demonstrate. Beautiful, beautiful. Oh, that's a very good one. Oh, watch the little bugs. They won't hurt you. Actually, you hold that for a sec. You don't eat the red part, but when you squeeze it, you get all these little seeds, like fruit gushers. And they're not bad. If you'd like to try them, you're more welcome. we can go around back. If you see any, go for it. I think we also have some scarlet runner peas on here. So there's some other vines happening as well. And they're a great time. You'll see here we've got some stuff marked off. Personal favorite, Belle of the Ball, lemon balm over here. She's getting a little singe. It's a little hot for her this summer, but like, for whom is it not? Lemon balm is really great to add to anything. I've been putting it in a lot of salads lately. It's really good if you've got like a bed at home that you just want full immediately. She'll take over. She'll really make a space her own. That's another thing I appreciate. It's really good as a hydrator. So if you're, you know, trying to be fancy, making a little spa water for yourself, you just like plop a couple torn leaves of lemon balm in there. It'll really keep you going. It's really, really nice. Like that and a little mint will make your time outside less onerous and less likely to have like a headache and need a 5-hour nap after, which I appreciate as well. The little squeaky dude next to the lemon balm, she's still coming into her own. I'm pretty sure that's Greg's mist flower. That's a fun native flower here in town. We'll see another one later that's got a lot more flowers. They have these like little purple, not spiky, but like fluffy heads. You probably have seen them around. I like their common name. There's a lot of Gregs. There's just one botanist who named a bunch of stuff, and that happens in Texas botany. We'll have a lot of Drummonds too, although I think he was more widespread. Doesn't matter. I think we can talk a little bit about guilds if we go this way. We'll take a brief stop. One sort of tenet of permaculture gardening is guilds. So when we're thinking about how do we, you know, mimic nature, guilds are a really helpful tool to try and emulate. Some of the key features you might want or the key roles you'd like to fill is a canopy, especially out here, as you might expect. So in this instance, we've got like a lovely peach tree. We've got more of them going down that way. Underneath, we're trying to establish, again, it's been a hot summer. We've got some more lemon balm. We've got some comfrey that may or may not make it. In the spring, if we were to plant cowpeas, which you'll see elsewhere as a cover crop, they would be the folks sort of adding nitrogen. They'd be our fertilizer plants. Comfrey and lemon balm sort of beef up the medicinal side of things. I forget the name of that flower underneath this peach tree, but that's one that we propagated from our friends at the community garden. And truly, we just clipped snippets and we put it in the ground. And one of them made it. And they're really good at sort of providing shade for the base of the tree. So they help keep the roots cool. They'll help make it easier for water to absorb. One fun fact about mulch, this is more of like a workday fact, and some of y'all may already know this, but you're not actually supposed to put mulch up to the stem of a plant or a tree. While it's really good at keeping things cool in the summer or warm in the winter, it, I believe, is acidic, so it can start to eat away at the plant itself. Donuts are the name of the game when you're mulching. I think we're gonna play a guess who real fast. This is our who's she. Who is this lady? Who's that lady? You've all met her before, I assume. So she's got these. Dill is a great guess. Not quite in this instance. Fennel. Fennel, another good guess. Fennel's a little shorter in general. But yeah, these are great guesses. I would say the one hint might be to look at some of the younger stalks. It is summer, so there's less of those. You've probably had them roasted. They have fun little tops. They're asparagus. Hey! Yes. So they're really fun because if you get a patch established, it can last for like over a decade. Like I remember when I first started here and I told my mom that there was an asparagus plant, like, oh, my grandmother had an asparagus plant all as I was growing up, which was fun to hear. So in the spring, these little stalks will just look like asparagus from the grocery store coming out of the ground. And then you just pick them and you eat them raw. And they don't have any of that stringy effect of grocery store ones. They're just crisp and sweet and perfect. Be here in the spring is what I'm saying. So I enjoy them quite a bit.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Now, asparagus needs more sandy soil, is that right?
I don't know that, but that is very like possibly
more,
true.
Okay.
I mean, that does speak to certain plants do have specific requirements in the context of this spot, we do have microclimates that we can try to tailor plant needs to. And I don't know about asparagus, but we are close to one I do know about, Oa Santa. She's really delicious. Over here is one, and then there's a couple more that way. She's most native to, I believe, central southern Mexico and further south, but she needs the shade. She needs the shade. She's not into the summer thing, and winter's also an issue. This really shady patch, we call this our banana berm. That's the place where we can most closely mimic her preferences. So the only plants we've been able to make survive live in that spot because it skips most of the brutal afternoon sun and being sort of cradled underneath the figs and the mulberries sort of keeps her safe, as it were. So this is the first Texas native I knew the name of, but no, I didn't because I mispronounced it for about a year. I thought it was Argarita, like margarita without the M. It is Agarita. It is Agarita, not Argarita. I was like in a Jimmy Buffett mood, I guess. But she's magnificent. She's wonderful. In the spring, sort of earlier spring, she gets these just like massive yellow flowers, little yellow flowers that will like hit you in the face with this buttery sweet smell. That's like the whole reason that you do spring here, in my opinion. Like the mountain laurels and this woman, those are the two. And then they become these bright red berries that are edible and pretty delicious. A lot of hill country folks will make jam with the berries. I've made a butter before because I couldn't quite harvest enough, but the jam is better. You might notice there's some pokingness here. So this is a great plant for any of y'all who have yards and might live in a deerish area. The deer will not mess with Agarita. But every other animal that's small loves this as a food source, especially the berries. If you're going to harvest the berries, the pro tips are you put a sheet underneath and you shake. Mixed success for me. But I've also heard like big canvas gloves and sort of lightly graze the branches. So that's another option. Foraging Texas is probably my favorite spot for like advice and ID help and recipes. So from a medicinal standpoint, the bark in here is yellow and it's got antiseptic properties. So the first time I remember I was on a farm and this lady who was in town from like Wisconsin with, I think she had like a doctorate in botany, was just like, oh yeah, I'll just like make a tincture. Anybody got like a bug bite, you just like dab some of the Agarita tincture and it helps it heal faster. And I love these wiry branches. This is called Texas Mallow. A lot of people also call it Turk's Cap. You'll see this dude all over the Greenbelt, all around town as landscaping with native plants has become more popular. The flowers are edible. If we would like one, go for it. The berries are also edible, but I kind of feel like the flowers are more delicious. One of the things about permaculture is we try to keep everything on site. So when we weed, we don't throw it away. That's like a valuable source of carbon. That's like some nice energy. That's some organic matter that we can feed back into the ground. So one way that we usually do that is we call it chop and drop. It involves loppers. So we'll like get our whole pile of stuff we've weeded. We'll come out under a tree and we'll make this little crown, this little Coachella flower crown around the tree. And that gives her some organic matter to eat as that decomposes. We get to sort of keep organic matter on site. The other spot that we really love to do that is right over here. These are our bananas. And you know, speaking of tropical climates or microclimates, I should say, these dudes, they like it humid. They like a lot of organic material. So as you can see, we try to keep them supplied with that. And there's a lot of stuff to keep up with in terms of weeding. Since at any given moment we're trying to balance being a food forest with being a public park. We're open to the public 24/7. If at any point you're like, you know what I want? Some lemon balm. You can come out and harvest as long as you're doing it responsibly. I think harvest responsibly is more boring title than the topic itself suggests. I think there's a lot of really fun writing and discourse on like what that means. There's a lot of indigenous cultures that advocate asking a plant for permission and thanking a plant whenever you harvest from it. That asking is not a step in a ritual. It's like a pretty active, almost scientific process. Maybe I want some mint, right? I've got a tea that needs making, I need some mint. If I go up to a mint plant that's looking a little sad, a little wilted, no new leaves, then if I were to ask that plant if it's cool for me to harvest, I might come to the conclusion that that plant would not like to be harvested at that moment. I'd rather take some sprigs from somebody that's about to flower, they're doing so well. And similarly, in terms of quantity and thinking about, you know, only taking what we need and never taking more than 1/3 of the plant, never harvest from the first plant you see. There's a lot of, for lack of a better word, spirituality that you can sort of imbibe this process with. And for a lot of people, it's also as simple as it feels good to have my hands in the dirt. And that's certainly been my experience. We'll keep heading forward because there's some good snack opportunities this way. And then we'll start moving around. Okay, snack time. One more tropical. This is Moringa. Moringa. I thought there was a U. That's not right. So you could buy this powdered at Whole Foods. But the leaves are a really great source of minerals. They're kind of bitter, but they're really good for you. I like to take them home, put them in a smoothie. So we've got the big one there that's covered in passion flower vine. And then we have another one, I believe, on the end cap of the ladybird berm, our one closest to the highway. And there, another tropical. So this growth happened since this spring. In the winter, we cut it back to the roots. We take care of it that way. This is Mexican mint marigold. You can find them like at Barton Springs Nursery or the other ones that really emphasize like native species. You could probably find this guy. I have some in my garden. It survived the summer fairly well. And it's a delicious herb to cook with. And it's a taste that I really hadn't experienced before. We want to just take a leaf and pass it. It's almost got like a bit of an anise thing going to it. Very cooling and very delicious. You see that grassy looking dude? That grass is lemongrass. Woot woot. The last time we harvested from lemongrass, I think we did it in the winter. I don't know if it matters. But usually the way that process goes is you go in with gloves because the stalks get really rough. And you sort of cut a couple stalks from the base, from the ground, and then peel off the outer layer and you cut the sort of internal stalks. You can use the top, the grassy part too. I usually cut those up and save them for tea, but the stalks for soup, baby, for like a nice Thai soup, like a coconut. Oh, it's so good. You can usually buy lemongrass at like H Mart, but fresh is really hard to beat. That's another thing that I keep coming to terms with, like hanging out here, is every so often I'll get to go home with like a Japanese sweet potato or like a bunch of figs. And just like, no, this is better. This is better. Oh, speaking of apps, my personal favorite is iNaturalist. I know a lot of people are Seek fans and they are a tool by iNaturalist. And it's nice if you want like a quick answer, but I like iNaturalist because it'll give you the computer's best guess and you can sort of post that. But then nerds, human nerds come in and they're like, no. That is not just a marigold. That is a Mexican mint marigold. And so you can get a better sense of like the nuances. And also if you have something exciting, like a lizard that somebody hasn't seen in a while, you'll have like 6 nerds in the comments of your iNaturalist. And I really enjoy that. So this is a golden ball lead tree. I love her because of her flowers. Does she have any right now? Yes. These little Dr. Seuss dudes. Yes. I'm pretty sure that this is a nitrogen fixer as well. I think because I've heard somebody say that, and also I'm seeing these long seed pods that look like legumes, and all legumes are nitrogen fixers, and that's a sort of helpful fact. Down here below, we're doing something new, and we're trying to get a stand of garlic chive established. So yeah, we do have this sort of nuts edge coming in, but we also have snacks. Speaking of things that are absolutely killer in a salad. Garlic chive is a personal favorite. You just take like a little bit and pass it along. Garlicky while being very light. There was a quote I heard recently that like every plant has something to teach us. And I think that's true. For instance, so behind us, we were talking about peach trees, right? And like everybody's like, yes, peaches, I eat those. I get it. But you can also make a tea with the leaves. And it's a very cooling tea, another good summer thing to have in your back pocket. The taste is kind of almondy? Question mark. I would also say teas being teas, I'd blend it with something else too. This is mugwort. If you got a shady patch where nothing's happening, and maybe that frustrates you, mugwort would be great. If I were to take this sprig home and put it in a little bit of water, as long as I kept the water in a good spot and it had like enough sunlight, this would absolutely root. I'd be able to put it in some dirt and start a patch. If you have period cramps, this will sort of like help your blood flow. That being said, if you're pregnant, maybe hold off. You'd have to take a lot for it to like be a problem, but I just like to make sure. Usually if it's like helpful for like menstruation, it's something to maybe stay away from if you're pregnant, with the exception of motherwort, who's just a star in all contexts. But mugwort is also fun in that it's good for dreams. If anybody has like tried to give up smoking or has tried to cut back on weed and has tried to like smoke things that are not weed, this is a popular one. This, mullein, lavender. I've had it once, it was quite nice. But I love it as tea. I think that's probably my favorite. The sort of dream element is that if you're trying to work on lucid dreaming, it can be helpful. Is that placebo, is it not? If you have some mugwort tea and then you're on your phone for 2 hours and then you go to bed, you might not work out. I can think of at least one instance where I was like, no, that was pretty wild. That was a crazy dream. And that is chemically because, I forget which chemical compound, but you know how DMT has like three chemical compounds? Mugwort has one of those in like a small, reasonable number. I wouldn't really do it as like an herb. Like it's really bitter, but if for whatever reason you wanna catch a vibe or just smell it. Most herbs actually are better, or their medicinal properties are stronger if you dry them. We've got a really good rose bush. And I was really surprised that even in that context, rose tea, it's still better. I've tried it both ways now, fresh rose petals and dried rose petals. And the dried rose petals are like absolutely more delicious. Like it's not even close. Does anybody here like dolmas? So if you like dolmas and you have a Saturday to kill, I would recommend just taking home some of these fat new green leaves. You blanch these bad boys, make yourself some dolmas. These dudes are so prolific that we have to make sure they don't get so far into the trees as to cause problems. But yeah, grapes are a wild plant. And I think we're probably past the fruit season. We do also have some native grapes. So there's two main types, muscadine and Mustang. So if you see a vine in any natural spot and it's not Virginia creeper or morning glory, it's probably a grape. Or like you still see them on the trail right now. Like if you're on just like Lady Bird Lake on the hike and bike trail, if you sort of look down and there's like weird like black circles and they're like a little sticky, those are probably grapes. Those are probably wild grapes that have fallen on the trail. We have a lot. It's really nice. You can make wine with them. I've had it. Meh. That might also be because my friend Will wasn't quite a vinter yet. So this is yarrow. Yarrow is a Hall of Famer. Everybody loves yarrow. Yesterday at Trader Joe's, I saw them selling yarrow, like in a flower arrangement, which I found very weird. The reason we like yarrow so much, every part of the plant is medicinal. The leaves, the roots, the flowers, and like really crazy in terms of the various uses. If you ingest it, if you take it internally, it helps your blood flow. But if you have a cut or a bug bite and you just like, you take a leaf and you go yum, 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 yum. And then I have one over here, so I'm just gonna do that. Then it'll like help it heal. It'll like help the blood stop flowing. It's called a coagulant. It used to be called soldier's herb, which is delightful. So this is a great tea. The flowers are the most fun to make into tea. I like to separate the flowers. We may as well talk like best drying procedure while we're here. Some people will like string like a clothesline in like a cool dry place and like hang branches, which looks cool. I find that can be kind of unwieldy and not worth it. But what I like to do is I'll take like a cookie sheet and I'll just like spread everything out you just want to make sure there's not like piling, because if you have that like moisture building, then it won't dry appropriately. And you just want to put that in like a nice cool dry place. Maybe you come back in like a day or two, or if you're really on it like every day, and you just move stuff around to make sure nothing's getting like sticky or weird. I mean, we're in such a hot climate, it does not take long. That's my preferred method to dry my stuff. These tall stalks, these are goldenrod. They're really nice in that they're a native plant that actually can really hold her own against invasives and does really well with fall aster, which is that plant that happens in the fall and it's got like a, it looks like a little purple daisy. Love it. Love, we have some coming in. I'm very excited about it. So fall aster and goldenrod flower at the same time. And it seems as if they have co-evolved their flowers from like a color theory standpoint to be the most complementary and appealing to pollinators, which is lit. So purple and yellow. And then the flowers, you can make a medicinal tea to fight urinary problems with. And also, as many of these things just so happen, it's just delicious. So like, you don't need a urinary problem to have the tea. So I think we're gonna head this way and talk a little bit about Three Sisters Gardens. This is probably like one of my favorite spots from an educational standpoint, because we really can't talk about permaculture without talking about indigenous communities. Indigenous people have been doing this for thousands of years, so like, we should probably follow their lead. And Three Sisters Gardens are some really just impressive work, like very beautiful and very impressive work from like an agricultural context. So Three Sisters Gardens are really one of the best examples, in my opinion, of stacking functions and using plants' tendencies together. Let me introduce you to the Three Sisters. They are squash, corn, and beans. And that squash and that corn and those beans will vary widely based on where you are. And for our instance, corn, or at least all the varieties we've tried so far, really struggle in this climate. So we've actually done like a little substitution and we've used sunflowers for that role. And that role is trellis, essentially. They come up really quickly and then they provide something for the beans to climb. And we're sort of late in the season, so I'm not seeing like as many beans right now. But if you see anything climbing, like that's what that is. Ground cover is squash. So it protects the other plants from the sun. Everything's making food. But a lot of folks around the world are like hip to the squash flower game, the squash blossom game. Its own culinary wonderland. Don't sleep on squash blossom. And beans are a legume, as we mentioned, so they're adding nitrogen to the soil. And then the way that they all germinate at different times, it supports the other two's growth at any given moment. It's like a gorgeous team project. It's a group project that went well. I was at an ethnobotanical garden earlier this year, and I'm pretty sure that this type of gardening, Three Sisters Gardening, has been going on for at least 5,000 years, possibly 10,000. I kind of forget. The 10,000 might have been when human beings domesticated corn. I think that was it. Shout out to the people of Oaxaca for doing that. That was really chill. Love corn. You'll see we keep the dead sunflowers around, which is not the prettiest choice per se, but bird food. The birds love this. Earlier this week, or maybe it was week before, I can't really remember, we had two lesser goldfinch land on the sunflower, like 2 minutes after we talked about like how good they are for bird food. And golden, lesser goldfinch have like these really beautiful, as one might expect, like yellow bellies. It was just like a really, it was a great day. So let's talk about cover crop. It's summer. It's this summer in particular. It's a hard time to be a plant or a person. And one way we try to make it easier is by covering the ground with plant matter, because it produces shade. So even if it might be like a bit of a nuisance, or maybe it's not like the prettiest or the most useful plant in the whole world, it's helping keep the other plants alive. In the winter, we'll do that with like Austrian winter peas. And in the summer, at least this year, we've planted cow peas. And you may mention, or you may notice that peas is in both of those cover crops. They're both legumes. They both add nitrogen to the soil, baby. So you can see there's so many cow peas around here. To the point where this Thursday, they've been so prolific, we had to get them out of some stuff. Because we didn't really realize like how tall or really how like voracious these folks were gonna be.
Thanks for joining this Food Forest Walk. If you'd like to donate to the Festival Beach Food Forest, go to festivalbeach.org. You can also find volunteer opportunities and sign up for the newsletter at festivalbeach.org. I'm Leah Lavise, and I'll see you at the Food Forest.